It's in your home state. It's outside of your door. And it's going to eat you up. Oh, I got my Jell-O star smearing it all over the floor. Get out of here, chicken heart! I set the sofa on fire. You won't come near smoking fire and Jell-O. My father came in the house and what? What the hell's the sofa doing on fire? Come in the house, the chicken heart's gonna eat you up. Hurry up, okay. Zip. What chicken heart are you talking about? The one on the radio. Say, you idiot, turn it off.
I hadn't thought of that.
Hey, thanks for tuning in. This is Matt Santos of the Mile High Show. This is episode 110. Actually, it's probably more like 109.25. It's not even 109.5 because it was supposed to be out almost a week ago, 5 days ago. I try and put out an episode every Monday or two. Monday's the target. Sometimes it comes out on Tuesday. Lately, it's been coming out like on a Wednesday. Well, guess what? It's now Saturday night. I'm only 5 days late with episode 110. So it's kind of 109.25. I don't know. Today's episode is brought to you by Amazon. Amazon is where you do all your online shopping. Most of you do anyway. No doubt you have an Amazon account, either an Amazon or an Amazon Prime account. You probably got that bookmarked on your toolbar, on your bookmarks, your favorites, whatever you call them on your web browser, on your phone. You know what? Do me a favor. Delete that. Clear your history and delete that bookmark. What I want you to do instead is bookmark milehighshow.com. Right there at the bottom of the page is a link for Amazon. If you bookmark milehighshow.com as your Amazon link, what it does is you click that. It opens up our website, milehighshow.com. I'm repeating it a lot of times. See how I'm doing that? So you remember, at the bottom of that page is a big Amazon button. Click that. It takes you directly to your Amazon or your Amazon Prime login, just like you normally do. It doesn't cost you anything else, nothing extra. You log in, you shop away as usual. It does not cost you an extra dime. You know what it does do? It lets Amazon know you got there through, here it comes again, milehighshow.com. So do that for us. It doesn't cost you an extra dime, but at the end of the month, guess what? Amazon gives us a little thank you by giving us a little taste at the end of the month. So it's a great way for you to help out the Mile High Show, help us pay our bills, help us take care of what we need to do to keep bringing you a show, ideally on time and not 5 days late. And it does all that, again, free of charge to you. So use that link at milehighshow.com, the Amazon button, to do your online shopping. We're also brought to you this week by another member of the Amazon family. That's Audible, right next to the Amazon link at milehighshow.com. See how I keep repeating that? That way you don't forget where we are. You can also listen to all our old shows there. Right next to the Amazon link is an Audible link. You can get a free audiobook download and a free 30-day free trial. So again, let me repeat that because I butchered it so bad. A free audiobook download and 30-day free trial by using the code at checkout, MileHigh. So you click that Audible link at milehighshow.com, go through, do your shopping. I tell you what, one of the books I've been listening to is A Life Standing Up, Steve Martin, read by the author. It's a great history of Steve Martin's life growing up in Southern Cal and how he took up comedy and his writing career and everything. It's a great, great listen. Or how about this? Writers Speak, a collection of interviews with writers on Fresh Air with Terry Gross. Terry Gross is one of my favorite interviewers. Fresh Air, one of my favorite shows on NPR. This is a collection of writers being interviewed by Terry Gross. Terry Gross, the premier interviewer of our era. Again, audible.com, shop away, get your free audio download and a 30-day free trial by using the code at checkout, Mile High. This is usable on iPhones, Androids, Kindle, MP3 players, anywhere. Over 180,000 titles to choose from. And guess what? You're not happy with your Terry Gross book or your Steve Martin book or anything else, any of the other 180,000? Return it. Change it for another book for free, no questions asked. You can't lose. And at the end of 30 days, if you don't think you're going to lose it, cancel your subscription. No harm, no foul, no charge. Again, audible.com. Use the code MILEHIGH at checkout. Over 180,000 titles to choose from. Check out Writers Speak, a collection of interviews with writers on Fresh Air with Terry Gross. It's a great listen. That's probably going to be my next one after I finish a couple things I got in the queue. So those are two ways you can support our show. Again, the Amazon link at milehighshow.com and the code MILEHIGH at checkout for audible.com. There's another way you can support us. It doesn't cost you anything. It'll take you about 2 minutes to do. On our website under the support, I got to click it because I forget what it is. How about under Support the Show tab right across the top? There's a link to our iTunes account. Jump on there. Give us a rating and a review. Give us a couple of stars and then type out a little review. It doesn't cost you a dime. It's completely free. It'll take you about 2 minutes to do, but what it does is it boosts our visibility. It helps us garner new listeners. It helps us move up the rankings. And again, a great way to support our show for absolutely free. You want to go a little deeper? Maybe give us a buck or two on that same support our show page. There's a little donate button for PayPal. Click it, drop us a dollar or two, $3, $4. Every little bit helps. It helps us take care of some equipment, like this fancy Zoom recorder I'm using, this microphone I'm talking into, these headphones wrapped around my head helping me listen to my scraggly coffee voice because I've been coughing for 3 weeks. It also helps us get things like our new PA system that we picked up just today that a sponsor took care of for us. Well, more will come on that later, but it's to help us do some of our live shows in front of audiences so you can hear us a little better in the smaller venues that we do. Big Daddy E's, for instance, Gabby's Grill that we've been at a few times, some of the local coffee shops and things. Those fine restaurants and coffee shops and places that let us set up and invite an audience in. This way you can hear us a little better and talk. It's a simple, small system, and it was paid for by donations just like the ones you're going to give us when you click the donate tab or the donate button on our Support the Show tab. So every little bit helps. I thank you in advance. Again, if you want to support us for absolutely free, just takes a couple minutes of your time, go to our iTunes page, click that iTunes button at our Support the Show tab, and leave us a rating and a review. Now, the reason I say this is kind of a less than 110 episode, more like a 109 and a quarter, is because, like I said, it's 5 days late, but I wanted to put out an episode just because that is my goal. But we have been extremely busy in our home and in our business as of late. A lot of jobs out of town. Some of them made their way to podcasts. Some of them did not. I was back and forth to Phoenix several times over the last month. Spent a weekend working in Flagstaff. Spent a weekend working in California. So I've been on the road running around. And in the course of all that running around, I've picked up a bug or two. And my my coughing and my hacking and my wheezing has spread its way through our family, unfortunately. My little seven-year-old son, he just turned seven recently. We were out of town this past weekend, and he got sick while we were gone. So he was miserable. He was tired and wore out and achy and crying, and it made me feel horrible. We get back to town on Monday when I was supposed to be interviewing somebody and posting the show. And unfortunately for my little boy, he was feeling so bad. He was up all night Sunday night. We took him into the doctor Monday morning. He had a double ear infection, was feeling miserable. He got his antibiotics and some painkiller, little ibuprofen syrup. Took it and zonked out. So I let him sleep the bulk of the day to heal up, and I took advantage of that after being up all night and turned off my phone, turned off my computer, and then we both rested. He started feeling better on Tuesday, but was still under the weather. He was off all week for his fall break from school, so that worked out okay. Although we did have some fun stuff planned that we had to shelve. Maybe we'll get to that in a week or two. But Tuesday, he was still feeling under the weather a little bit, but was getting his energy back. So we both played at home, and I tried to stay as much with him as possible. But while he was resting, I got some editing done. So I am slowly catching up on those Big Pine Comedy Festival photos and the photos from the Comedy Store La Jolla of Steve Simone, Brenton Biddlecombe, Bob Hansen, Jesse Egan, to get those out. And I have been catching up on those this week. But between myself getting sick, my son catching the plague, and being on the road, I am slowly catching up with the work that's been piling up, and that is why this episode is one guestless. There's no guest here, and why I am 5 days late, sitting in my garage at 11:45 on a Saturday night, sitting all by myself recording this. So, most of you, I'm sure, have already tuned this off. So I'm talking to myself. But if you are listening, this is going to be my little episode to rant a little bit. Let's start by what was one of my favorite storytellers. And you may think it's an odd choice because of what we have over the last few years learned about the man, the doctor himself, Dr. Bill Cosby. Obviously, we in the general public have come to know more about Mr. Cosby's activities than we would want to know. I grew up listening to his LPs from the mid and late 60s through the 70s and 80s. One of my favorite storytellers. He's one of my favorite comedians. He was not your average tell a joke in a punchline, boom, boom, you know, fast-paced comics. He was a long-form storyteller where his stories, especially of his childhood, I liked even more than his later albums like Himself, where he was talking about raising kids of his own. Those were great, but my favorites were the stories he told about his own childhood. Wonderfulness was a great LP. To My Brother Russell was one of my favorites, where he was telling the stories that we later came to know as the Fat Albert cartoon that was on TV. But before that cartoon, his LPs, his routines, told the story of him growing up with his brother and the interactions with his dad and his mom and the neighborhood kids and playing street football and light his couch on fire. All that fun stuff. Old Weird Harold. Long form, very funny stories that I used to love listening to as a child on our old stereo turntable with the lights off, because it let me envision what his street looked like. Oddly enough, it looked just like my street when we would play street football, where we didn't measure things out in yards. We measured them out in telephone poles. That was our standard measurement, was a telephone pole. Go up two telephone poles and hook right, or park cars. Go up three park cars and turn around.
We played street football right there on the street. And this is where we had the greatest quarterback in the world. Our quarterback, he had to control 23 men on a side, and he was really great at it. You women don't know anything about it. You played with dolls and stuff like that. But here's a guy with an ingenious mind. He'd call a football play like this. He'd always get down on one knee and draw things. You know, he'd take a Coke bottle top. Now, Shorty, this is you. This is a Coke bottle. I don't want to be the Coke bottle top. Okay, what do you want to be? Yeah, I want to be the piece of glass. Okay. Now, listen to this now. Arnie, go down 10 steps and cut left behind the black Chevy. Filbert, you run down to my house and wait in the living room. Cosby, you go down to 3rd Street, catch the J bus. Have him open the doors at 19th Street. I'll fake it to you. You always have one fat kid they never thought of. What about me? You go long.
He described his interactions with the neighborhood kids was how we envisioned it and how we interacted with our own neighbors and the neighborhood kids. And that was all in our mind's eye. That was what they call, you remember the old saying, the theater of the mind. I enjoy listening to him. I still enjoy listening to him. I know a lot of people can't. People were burning his LPs as his rape allegations were coming out over the last few years. People can't separate the stories, the art from the artist. And I don't know, they might be right. I don't know. What do I know? I know what I think, though, and what I enjoy is I can listen to those routines. Same thing with Woody Allen. Take the Money and Run, a hilarious movie about Virgil Starkwell, a mockumentary in the line of Best in Show. What was the other one? Spinal Tap. Well, Woody Allen did that way back when in the 60s. It was a documentary, a fake documentary, a mockumentary about this bank robber that Woody Allen played, and just the character we all know as Woody Allen, the Weasley little wimpy guy, milquetoast, and he turns into a bank robber and how he tries to escape from prison and the interviews with his parents as they're wearing the old Groucho fake nose and mustache and glasses. It was a hilarious movie. Well, of course, later on we start hearing the allegations in recent years, recent decades, about Woody Allen's personal life and his interactions, his alleged interactions with his stepchildren and his children. Can we separate the artist from the art, from the art, the art from the artist? I can. I view it in the same way as, you know, you might have a favorite ball player or an actor or a singer that are just horrible people off the field, backstage, away from the camera. I don't know. Does that mean I'm not going to watch one of their movies? I don't know. I don't know if that's right. I don't know if that's wrong. It's just when I see an actor, when I hear a singer, when I watch an athlete, that's what I'm watching. I'm not watching the person off the field, off the camera, off the stage. Is that right? Probably not. Is it how everybody should feel? Probably not. I don't know. It's a decision you all get to make for yourself. In this day and age we live in 2016, where everything is instantaneous, when Instagram and Twitter and Facebook is how people get their news, are people just worse? I think they are. I think as a species, human beings are getting worse and worse, and every day, every year, I think it's because we're being desensitized to violence and corruption and dishonesty as our generations move on. I think we're just getting desensitized. We're not as sensitive to horrible things because we see it so much. So a lot of people argue, well, no, it's just because now there's a camera on every corner and everybody's got a camera in their pocket in the form of a cell phone. And it's not that things are happening worse or happening more. It's just that now we can see it. Before, if there was 10 assaults in a day, we didn't hear about it. We might have heard about one. But now we get to see real-time video as people are live streaming it. That could very well be the case, but I think because we're seeing the horrible things in real time, and we're instead of the three networks, now we have 500 channels of information being shoved down our throat every day, and limitless internet pages that feed us garbage more often than not. I think we are getting desensitized to it. I think we are becoming numb to the badness that's around us, and that then causes people to do more badness. I think it's a loop that just makes one doesn't disprove the other, one encourages the other. Yes, there is more that we're seeing because of technology, but at the same time, people are doing more bad things because they're seeing more bad things because we're becoming numb to it. I don't know if that's okay. I don't know if that's true. That's what I believe. Come up with your own theory on why things are icky today. I like that word icky. We don't use it enough. Anyway, that's my I don't even know why I'm getting on this rant, because I guess separate what you see and the people that create it. I don't know. Like I said, it's late at night. This is a rant. I don't know why I thought of Bill Cosby when I was plugging in this mic and sitting down in this garage. I don't know why I thought of Woody Allen. I don't know why I thought of the endless stream of information. But it's been a weird couple of weeks. Like I said, I've been very busy covering some things that I enjoy to cover, covering some things strictly because it's a paycheck, covering some things just because they are news. And I had a nice long talk with a couple of friends of mine today about just that fact. And I don't even know if all this ties together. I'll let you decide if you're even still listening, because you very well might not be. But I was trying to explain to them, and I don't know if I did a good job, that's my job, is to cover an event, tell a story. I don't necessarily support, agree with, or like the stories I'm telling. For the most part, I do, because much of what I do in our little small neck of the woods in Arizona, in Yavapai County, in and around the Prescott-Chino Valley area, a lot of what I view is pretty, and I don't want to say inconsequential, but it's not hard-breaking news. They're featurey things. They're little meet and greets and things. The people I talk with on this podcast are, for the most part, entertainers and local folk who have a good story to tell, or an interesting job, or an interesting hobby, or an event coming up, or musicians, whatever. So I get to do that. I get to sit and hear people's stories and talk with them. But I used to be a straight photographer. I used to be just a shooter. In the last number of years, it's transitioned more to writing. And then in the most recent 3 or 4 years, it's gone to broadcasting and now this podcast. So it's more vocal storytelling. But whether I'm telling a story with my camera, my keyboard, or a microphone, I'm just telling the story. I don't always like, agree, or support the people that I am covering, the stories that I am telling. I'll give you an example. A few years back, I photographed an accident. It was a bad accident. It turned out to be a fatality. I took photographs. I got quotes. I relayed information. I got a couple really nasty emails, and I was contacted, I guess. I don't want to say confronted at the grocery store, at our local supermarket here. And I was reprimanded because of the speed limits and the visibility, speed limits and visibility that played a role in this accident. And I was thinking, well, why are you telling me? And I asked somebody, I said, well, why? Okay, I understand your concern, and I can tell you're very passionate about your thing. Why are you telling me? She goes, well, you were there. Well, yeah, I was. I took pictures and wrote a couple of paragraphs. I have no control over that. Right now, one of my big clients, one of the things that takes up a lot of my time, or that I dedicate a lot of time to, is the relaying of information from a local municipality to the public. I'm not an employee. I'm a contractor. I'm not a policy maker. I'm a funnel. I'm a messenger. The local officials, the local representatives say something. I write it down and I send it out to the public. Not a week goes by that I am not pumping gas or grocery shopping or often sitting at the park with my son, that I don't get confronted by people complaining to me about quotes I wrote of somebody else. In my mind, well, my face, I smile. And I say, well, you know, maybe you should call so-and-so. Here's a number. In my mind, I'm thinking, why are you telling me? I cannot do anything about this. I am the funnel. It's like going to a lot of local towns and neighborhoods and things have bulletin boards, whether it be at the grocery store, at the laundromat, or wherever, at the coffee shop, where people put notices about garage sales, their business cards for their hair salon or their dog grooming business or whatever. And they'll put things to announce different events. Yelling at me is much like reading something on one of those bulletin boards that you don't agree with and then yelling at the bulletin board. That's what it's like to yell at me about something. I have tried to explain to people. I have no, what's the old saying? I don't have a horse in this race. I don't have a stake in this. I am just taking information from one body and presenting it to another. And I have been called a liar. I have been called a mouthpiece. I have been told when I've explained it, and for any of you that know me personally, I'm the least political person you'll ever meet. I have no allegiance to any politician or political party or political movement for various reasons. If you really want to know what those reasons are, off mic, ask me. I would be happy to explain those to you. For those of you that do know me and know me well, you know exactly what I'm talking about. I am that bulletin board. That's what I do. I present what somebody else has said. That people call that a reporter, a photographer, a broadcaster, whatever. I guess the actual term of it would be a journalist. I just feel like an idiot saying that. I think to call myself a journalist is rather pretentious and sounds silly. I'm a storyteller. I'm a funnel. I'm a bulletin board. It's a lot like you get your APS, you get your power bill or your water bill or your sewer bill or whatever, your cell phone bill in the mail, and it's higher than you wanted to pay and you don't like it, and it goes up every month or every whatever, and you don't like it, or you think there's a mistake in it, and that comes to you in the mail and you sit there and rail on your mailman about it. That's what it's like. He's just delivering it. He or she is just delivering it, putting it in your mailbox. It doesn't do any good to yell at the mail carrier about your cell phone bill. It doesn't do any good to yell at the bulletin board because you don't like that business card that somebody stuck to it. If you're that concerned about what is going on in your community, show up at a meeting. You know, do what you think you can do to fix it. Or you can do like me and just wait for something better to come along. And that's what I'm doing. And in the meantime, I like to sit back and enjoy my peace of mind, what little mind I have left. I like to hear people tell stories. I like to sit down and talk with people. And I often do that with a microphone sitting between us. Where are we at here? At a half hour. So anyway, that's a couple of weeks ago, I went to a job. It was just a job. It happened to be for a politician, Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump was in town, and I got hired to go take pictures at it. Some people took my being there as a sign of support for a politician. And I've got no allegiance to the other part. I have nothing at all. I was just there. I was hired to be there. Some people took it to mean that I was there in support of somebody. Now, if I was sitting in the stands with a banner in my hand or a hat on or a t-shirt on and cheer, I can understand that. Let me explain to you what it was like to be there as a person of the media. We had to line up in a separate line than the public. We had a separate entrance. We had a separate time we can go in. It was mandated that we wear a special thing around our neck or pinned to our shirts. There was a special area we had to stand in, which after a certain point, we were not allowed to wander out of. The general public could walk around the whole arena, the whole building. The media had to stay in a pen. There's no other way to describe it. There was a 3.5 foot metal fence, the railing that they made a big square, and we could not leave that square after a certain point. Things started at 2 o'clock. As of 1:30, half hour before it started, we weren't allowed to walk out of that pen. If we did, we had to leave the building. During one of the speeches, one of the speakers instructed the audience to turn and look at us. And they were told, see, that's the media. They are the enemy. So it was literally called us the enemy. So we were very separated. It was segregation in its truest form. We were not there as participants. We were there as observers, as storytellers to document the day, the event. And that's where I was. So it baffles me that people were under the impression that I was there as a participant. So it was a little frustrating. I've had a little frustrating week again because people put upon me and others like me their interpretation of what our agenda is. And I'll be completely honest, there are big numbers in the media who have agendas, who have a certain idea, philosophy, theory that they are trying to get across. I am not one of them. If I am at an event, a game, a concert, a rally, I am not in support of that, just like I am not in support of an accident on the freeway. I am there to tell a story, to give an account of the event, the rally, the accident, the game, whatever. That's not to say I don't enjoy doing things, going to a movie, going to a show, going to a concert. And sometimes I will report on those, but I will, I think for those of you that know me, there are, it's very clear in what I do for enjoyment and what I do for work. And it's very evident in how I talk about what I am doing, where I have been, and what I have seen, whether or not I am telling you, hey, you know what you need to do is you need to go see this band. Because a lot of the bands I talk with, the musicians, the entertainers I talk with, I do so because I enjoy their art. I enjoy their music. When I am doing a straight news item or I am photographing a news event, it's very clear that I am there just relaying the information. So don't put your agendas on the storyteller, I guess is what I'm trying to say. I'll give you a good example, another example. No, these aren't even good examples. These are the ramblings of a very tired individual in the middle of his garage. I'm sure I've lost everybody already, but this is what I'm very intimately familiar with that that arena, now known as the Prescott Valley Event Center. It used to be Tim's Toyota Center. I've been to many, many events there. In a packed standing room only, there's just over 6,000 people. At that political rally I was at, 60 to 75% of the floor was taken up with the media corral and the platform and the media tables where the public weren't able to get to. The entire floor was basically taken up except for the very front part in front of the stage. Now, directly behind the stage, there were bleachers set up that were brought in for the event. So three sections of the regular seating were blocked off. So if jam-packed standing room only is about 6,000, I'm getting a little over 6,000, 6,200, 6,300, something like that. I would be very surprised if there was more than 5,200 people in that arena. Those putting out the figures on behalf of the rally itself were claiming well over 7,000 people in that building. Didn't happen. They were claiming there was over 15,000 people outside. Now, I left in the middle of the, or at the tail end, the last, you know, I sat through about three quarters of the main speaker, Mr. Trump. Just before he left, he had another 10, 15 minutes left, or maybe less than that. I left. I wanted to beat the crowd. I had to get back to take care of things. I had gotten what I needed to do. So that was the bulk of the people outside. At the very most, about 1,500 people at the very most. Now, what was presented in some media outlets and what was presented by the organizers were photographs of the people before the doors opened. So lines of people, those same, I'm guessing, about 5,200 people, lined up waiting to go in. Then photographs of a fairly full arena. So the people that we are looking at in pictures outside were the exact same people that were inside. I would guess, I'd say in total, both inside and outside, 8,000 to 10,000 people, maybe. I would say closer to 8,000. The reports coming out were 20,000 to 30,000, and that's what people were believing. So again, there are members of the media with their own agenda. It's frustrating to be part of something, to be at an event and hear those. I'll give you an example. Like I said, I left a little early, had some errands to run, came back to Chino from Prescott Valley, and I had to stop at the store. So I stopped at the store. The checker recognized me and says, "Hey, were you at that Trump thing today?" Because by then it was already over and people were coming home from it. And I said, "Yeah, you know, I was there for work." And she goes, "Was it a madhouse like they were saying on the TV?" And they said there was like 25, 30,000 people there. And I laughed. I said, no, there was maybe 5,000, little, 5,200 people inside. About 1,000, 1,500 outside. I don't know. It wasn't anywhere near that. And I told her, I said, I'd be really surprised if I heard there was more than 8, 9, maybe 10,000 people there total. And she goes, "Yeah, that's what I couldn't understand." Evidently, for an arena that seats about 6,000, they issued 18,000 tickets for it. I knew some people that were looking to get tickets the day before and were told everything was sold out. Well, a lot of people, evidently, our old guest, he was on last week, Mondo Gonzalez, he was looking for tickets. He said he had people offering them to him left and right because they didn't want to deal with the massive crowds that were being reported on being there. So he was able to get tickets, no problem. Well, so they inflated these numbers, and I'm telling her that. I said, "Yeah, there wasn't anywhere near that. I'm telling the checker that." Well, at the register next to us, there's a gentleman making a purchase who was also at the rally, and his cashier asked him, "Hey, were you at that rally?" He goes, "Yeah, it was amazing. There was like 25,000 people there. There was almost 10,000 inside, and it was so packed, it was standing room only." And I kind of looked at him, and the person that was checking me out kind of laughed. And so I asked him, I said, "Oh, was there that many? I heard there was a lot less." And he goes, no. "It was standing room only. The entire floor was packed. You could barely move." Now, I know that to be false because that's where the corral was that I was there. So I asked him, I says, "Well, wasn't there like a whole media area that was fenced off that took up most of the floor?" He goes, "Well, there was, but before Trump went up, they kicked all the media out. And they had to move them out because it was too packed." I said, "Really? Weren't there like all the TV cameras and stuff?" He goes, "Yeah, no, they moved them all out because there was too many people on the floor." Now, all the seats weren't even taken, let alone that packed on the floor. I said, "Really? When did they move the media out?" "Oh, they got kicked out before Trump took the stage." He goes, "You should have been there. It was amazing to see." And there was thousands of people outside watching it on big screens. And I looked at him, I said, "That's odd, because that's where I was while Trump was speaking." He goes, no, they kicked all the media out." I said, "No, that's where I was. I was in that corral, and I left just, it was well over halfway through Trump's speech." And he looked at me and called me a liar. And then said, "I must be a typical Hillary supporter." And I says, "No, actually not. I don't support either candidate. I'm not, I was just there reporting on the thing." He goes, "Yeah." And he started yelling at me in the store. So I just kind of chuckled and got my stuff and left. He followed me out to the parking lot, yelling at me the whole time about how much of a liar I am because there was no way I was there. And I'm not saying, I mean, he was very passionate about what he was doing. And I have no doubt that if it was another different political party that was there, you wouldn't have people just as passionate and just as delusioned there. But I just don't understand how people can be so biased in what they're saying and what they think they're seeing. I don't understand how people could get caught so caught up in something that they ignore what they're looking at. They ignore what they're what's right in front of them. So I guess that's, I don't know. Again, this is just a long rant, but that's what I am frustrated with. When I sit down and talk with somebody, I try and get beyond, I try and get through the persona, the hype. I just want to talk to people. When I'm telling a story, that's what I want to get to, is just kind of the simple, as simple as possible. I want to boil it down as much as possible. When I'm taking a photograph, I don't want all the bells and whistles. I like things simple. When I look at something, I try and look at it as simply as possible. And when there's too much smoke and mirrors, it just gets frustrating. And when people try and make me part of those smoke and mirrors, it's very frustrating. I'm just a simple guy with a camera and a microphone and a keyboard, and I don't want to be part of the circus. I like being an observer. My old high school journalism teacher, Mr. Maurice Schmidt, once told me, when I expressed at a very early age my desire to become a news photographer, and I was a young 15-year-old photographer in his journalism class at Mount Eden High School in Hayward, California. He says, you know, writers at least write out the story, and participants in games, the athletes are playing. He goes, photographers are a weird bunch. All they do is sit and stare. They're like voyeurs. He goes, photographers are a weird bunch. And, you know, Mr. Schmidt was right. We are a weird bunch. But I just like to watch. I like to observe. Lately, I've started to, instead of just click the picture to tell the story, I've written it down. And now, because I'm lazy and I don't like to type, now I just talk about what I see. And you might think I have a skewed perception of what I see, and I might be looking at things from a wrong or a distorted perspective. And you know what? You may be right. But my goal is to just tell what I see, ask the questions I'm curious about, and try and separate the person from the persona. Try and separate the character from the true person, the actor. Try and separate the art from the artist. And I don't know. Maybe I'm failing. Maybe I'm just old and I need to retire. Maybe I shouldn't take it so personal when people put their agendas or their perceptions on me about what my motives are and what my agenda is. I honestly don't think I have an agenda. I'm just curious. So I ask questions. I look, I observe, I record, I document, and try and make heads or tails out of something. I don't have an agenda. I don't have a end goal in a lot of what I do. Let me see, maybe that's wrong. Maybe that's not how we're supposed to go through life. I don't know. But for any of you that were doubting why I go to events, why I go to assignments, for the most part, it's to get a paycheck. It's often to satisfy my own curiosity. A lot of times it's to look behind the curtain and see who's really back there pulling the levers. But if I can bring some of those stories to you and let you come to your own conclusions, so be it. But I try not to have any preconceived agendas out there. Well, that's my rambling. What that has to do with Bill Cosby, I have no idea. Again, it's some old tired guy sitting in his garage feeling sorry for himself, I guess. Well, anyway, one thing I am in support of is going out and having some fun. So if you can, we got another few weeks left of some beautiful sunshine out here. Take your families out. Go for a walk. Go for a drive. Throw a blanket down on the grass at the park and take a nap. Go out there, have some fun. Have some good, clean, relaxing fun. Spend time with your family if they'll put up with you. I don't know. I guess I was just frustrated this week. Not feeling good. Watching my son be sick. And listening to people complain about what they think I am. Anywho, that's the Mile High Show. Use our Amazon link at milehighshow.com. Use the code MILEHIGH at checkout for audible.com. Get your free download. Get your free 30-day trial. And pick something interesting to listen to while you're sleeping in the park. Hey, use that, what's it called? The Support the Show tab. Drop us a dollar or two on our donate button for PayPal. And look for us coming to a venue near you. We've got our two-year anniversary coming up in December. We are hopefully going to do a live show somewhere in front of an audience, or I might just end up back here at midnight on a weekend in my garage. Who knows? I doubt anybody's still listening. So I'm just going to end it here.
Virgil Starkwell is apprehended in the act of bank robbery. He is given 10 years in the state's strictest maximum security prison. It is here that he mingles with hardened criminals for the first time. The prison has not been built that can hold me. Virgil tells another inmate, and I'll get out of this one if it means spending my entire life here.